And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It's 4 minutes past nine on this Friday, the 9th of February, 2024. And you're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show. And we've got plenty coming up over the next 3 hours to keep you informed and entertained. So hopefully you'll stick around. We'll be going to our Friday panel very shortly, where we're going to discuss a number of topics, as you can imagine, but we want you involved in that conversation as well. You can WhatsApp and text 086 60 25000. Send your WhatsApp voice notes there as well, or you can give us a call on 07491 25000. And if you want to email the show from wherever you're listening, it's comments@highlandradio.com. And if you want to join our growing community of those that watch the program, let me invite you to do so. You can watch on your big screen smart TV or your Fire Stick or Google TV by going to YouTube and typing in Highland Radio Ireland. We're streaming live there. Take us across your mobile devices on that same app, but we're also on Facebook, on Highland Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport, and streaming across the world on X, which is quite lively this morning because Tucker Carlson did an interview with Vladimir Putin. Okay, some of our guests are joining us. Some are already in. We'll say good morning first to Richard Logue, Project Manager in Transport London. Good morning, Richard. How are you getting on?
I'm very well, Greg, and apologies for some of the background noise. I'm actually at the departure lounge at Stansted Airport on my way to Donegal, in fact. So there may be a few announcements coming in. But I just wanted to mention one thing. I was at a function last night at the London Irish Centre hosted by Donegal County Council. And we had Martin Harley, the Cathaoirleach. Fantastic event. A lot of fun. Shay Given and Paddy Bonner talking about their time in football. But it was fun, but with a serious purpose, and that was to promote Donegal. And we've got two people in Donegal County Council as officers, that's Gary Martin and Anne-Marie Conlon, who do an awful lot of work behind the scenes promoting Donegal. And we also have some great ambassadors from Donegal and amongst the diaspora here in London. So Caroline McLaughlin, Troy Gallagher and John Kennedy, all really hard workers and out there the whole time promoting Donegal. So I think we're in safe hands.
Yeah, I think though that sounds like a wee junket I should have been at, but I don't know what the story is. Sounds like very interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, no, we had a lot of people, you know, business people from around London, but the big message underneath all that was, you know, promoting Donegal as a great place to live and work, and I'm taking that advice, and I probably know myself, that's why I'm coming over.
Okay, we want to say good morning to...
Thanks, Caroline.
We want to say good morning.
Morning, folks.
Okay. I love
can
this.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can. We're live. Good morning to you, Councillor Rena Donaghy, Fianna Fáil Councillor for the Municipal District in Inchon. Can you hear me, Rena? No, you can't hear me just yet. We'll get to you in a moment. Deputy Pearce Doherty, a very good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning to you, Rena. It's having trouble there. But yeah, good morning to you, Greg, and all your listeners and Richard there as well. So great to see you this morning.
Right. Okay. Let's get on to some of the topics here. And a new opinion poll suggested support for your party, Pearce Sinn Féin, slipped by 6%. 6 percentage points to 28%. The BNA survey for the Irish Times suggests that Fianna Fáil is unchanged at 20%, while Fine Gael is up 1 point to 19%. The poll says the Green Party has gained 2 points to 5%. Labour is up 1 to 4%. People for Profit 2%. Ain't Two is unchanged at 1%. The accuracy of the poll is plus or minus 2.7%. So I suppose that fall can't be ignored. So if you extrapolate those figures, you probably need around about 87 seats in the Dáil for a majority. So your party, Pearce, would need one of the big parties to get over the line, at least you'd imagine, while the current government would be around 13 seats short. I'll start with you, Pearce, because it is your party that's sort of the focus of this. I mean, I know the only poll that counts is Election Day, but it's the same when radio listenership figures come out. You know, it's great when they go up. But then you sort of can't ignore it a little bit if it slips back a little bit too. So I take it your party can't ignore that slip.
No, look, I've been somebody who's never suggested that, you know, you just dismiss polls. Politicians look at polls and, you know, you're 100% right. And look, let me just take the opportunity as well, Greg, to congratulate you and all the team at Highland Radio in relation to the latest listenership figures. It's a huge achievement to be number one nearly in all of the categories. So well done in relation to that. Look, in terms of our poll, in terms of the poll, it's not a good poll for Sinn Féin. You know, that's clear. We've slipped since whatever it was, September, the last time that poll has taken. Now, in saying that, and I've been watching some of the programmes and I've seen Fianna Fáil rubbing their hands with glee and talking about this here. Fianna Fáil has not gone up. Actually, Fianna Fáil is down since the last general election, and so is Fine Gael. Sinn Féin are actually the only party, I think, that is up since the last general election, and we're up a number of percentage points. I think four or something, according to the latest poll. So, like, you know, it's a slip. There's no doubt about it. Something that we have to look at to see how we can communicate the vision we have and our plan for changing the island clear. Because obviously there were people that were with us that were bought into that are now questioning that, and that's fine. You'll have some of these kind of cycles in politics, but we're still a long way off the other political parties in terms of we are the number one political party in the state for political support. But look, none of this is taken for granted. Absolutely none of it's taken for granted. We'll contest Donegal. We'll stand three candidates in the general election. Nobody is owed a seat. Nobody is owed a vote from anybody, even people who voted for us down throughout the years. I know that I have to earn every single vote that I have. I'll have to stand in front of people and basically say, you know, this is what I've been trying to do. This is what we've been doing in opposition. This is what we want to do if we get into government. And we take none of that for granted, you know. So would you have rather woke up yesterday morning and seen, you know, a poll showing we were at 34%, like the previous poll before that, we went up 3%, you know, in the Irish Times. So you will have swings and dips and all the rest. But look, there's a number of polls that have showed a softening of the Sinn Féin vote over the while. So we'll just need to dust ourselves down, look at how we can improve on that. And, you know, the Irish people still see Sinn Féin as the vehicle for change. Mm-hmm. And I think as the election becomes closer, there will be a clear choice here. There'll be a clear choice. Re-elect the government. The government parties are all talking about that they can do that. They can have Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Greens back in place again. That may happen. It absolutely may happen. Our job in Sinn Féin is to try and prevent that from happening, because we think that that's a disaster for ordinary families, workers, for housing, for health. Mm. You know, I'm going to go into the details in terms of what's happening in our hospital. So there's an onus and a responsibility on us to do that as well. And there will be a clear choice in the election, which people don't have at the minute because they're not focused on what that looks like, which type of government that you're electing.
Yeah, well, it takes that, I suppose, as we move on. But, you know, Rena, I've been saying for the longest time on this show as well that, you know, sometimes there's this presumption that there is going to be a change of government. But if you look at the figures, and we're a long way out from an election, I don't think we've really got into the nitty-gritty of an election yet as such. You know, there is a strong possibility that the current government could be returned. And it appears, as you've heard there, certainly taking nothing for granted. You're muted now, Rena. Sorry, if you could just unmute. Thanks so much, Rena. I'm very interested to hear what you have to say. Yep, shall I come back to you? I will. Well, Richard, just while Rena just unmutes there, how do you think things are going to play out?
Well, I can see real parallels between what's going on back at home and over here in England, because we've got a similar situation at the moment in the UK polls, where Labour Party, who many assume will be in the next government, are actually slipping down. And I'm a former political activist myself. I was a Lib Dem candidate in two local elections, lost both of them. So, you know, the issue is, I think, for any political party, is to never take the vote for granted, and for all parties to get out there and try and get the vote out. It's easy, and I've been in an election where I actually thought I was in the bag, and I had a pretty rude awakening when we saw the ballots coming out of the tallies. So the lesson for any politician is basically just to fight the votes and don't take a single vote for granted. And you know what? Sometimes when you're on the canvas, people will tell you they'll vote for you, and they've only been nice. So, yeah, you have to make sure that you work as hard as you possibly can to get, you know, to get that vote and not take anything for granted.
Now, Rena, I'll just go back to you. You know, as I was saying, if you're looking at the figures, you know, there are pathways to this government if they so wish to return after the next election, whenever that is. So that probably doesn't surprise you, because, you know, you're on the ground chatting to people, you know what's what.
Yeah, well, like others, the real poll is on the day. We do look at polls and all that, but the real poll is when the people come out and speak. And Sinn Féin standing in the latest opinion poll is a matter for Sinn Féin. You know, the focus of Fianna Fáil is to keep working hard at local, regional and national level, as they have been doing for the people. And I suppose it's worth pointing out that the Fianna Fáil leader and Taoiseach Micheál Martin had the highest approval rating of the four main parties on 44%. That's up 3 on the last poll carried out there in September. So, but as I say, polls are, the main poll is on the day when the people actually speak. So I would say it's we're quite a bit off an election yet. And there's a lot to be fought for, and there's a lot of work to be done. Opinion polls, they're merely a snapshot, Greg, in time of what way the electorate are thinking at a particular time. And given that Sinn Féin have dropped 6% in the Irish Times and the B&A opinion poll, and they're now at 28%, that is their lowest, I think, in 3 years. You know, so it looks as if the voters are not convinced that Sinn Féin's programme for government maybe is the right approach. But as time goes on, we'll see what happens. But I'm just happy that my own party are doing well at the minute. And a week is a long time in politics, Craig.
Well, 5 minutes is a long time in getting you on a Zoom call, let alone a week in politics. I'm only joking, Rita.
My internet, listen, I have to admit, is anything but good.
It's just brilliant to have you. I'm only jesting. But, Pierce, you know, what are people actually going to vote on in this coming upcoming election? I mean, you're very clear, your party's very clear, and as is the government, on you know, housing, health, you know, defective concrete, which obviously is a big issue up here. But nationally, you know, do people really see much difference between your party and others on issues like, you know, that are getting people talking, like immigration, for an example, and housing of immigrants, and what's going to happen into the future? You know, because we saw really in the Brexit vote, was it about extra money for the NHS? Was it about, no, it was really about, you know, let's keep people out. Do you know, it gets down to the sort of the easiest maybe thing to form an opinion on. So is that a problem for your party, do you think, Pierce, to distinguish itself from other parties on the big issues that actually might motivate people to the ballot box? Like, I know what the big issues are for me, but it's probably not what the great public are going to be voting on.
No, I don't think that is the case at all. You know, and like, you know, rightly, we're having this conversation in relation to the latest opinion poll and a drop in Sinn Féin support. And as I said, you know, I've watched, you know, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael with glee talk about how Sinn Féin are dropping and some of our votes are maybe going to the smaller parties or the independents. And it's really probably something that people need to sit up and take notice for. It's not, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael aren't going up at all. They're actually lower than the general election. It's only Sinn Féin that have got more support since the general election. Many people say that we would drop and it was a protest vote and all the rest. We knew it was a vote for change, and that vote for change has increased. But the reason Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are happy is because they know that when people decide not to vote for Sinn Féin and vote for an independent candidate or another third party candidate, they know that that increases their chance of being elected into government. Because the reality is, if we're going to deliver the change, it will be a Sinn Féin-led government in the next election. So, Greg, you know, like, we want to do obviously better. We want to get, every politician will want to get more support than they ever have. Rena will want that in a local election. You know, you'll want that in a general election. That's just the you know, you'll always want more than what you have because you believe passionately, regardless of our political differences, in terms of what you believe in and what you can achieve or what your party can achieve. So, like, we take that as a standard here. But people do understand. People are very clear, understand that Sinn Féin offers something very, very different. You mentioned in relation to the defective bloc. It's going to be a massive motivating factor for people in those areas because they know Sinn Féin is committed to 100% redress. But not just that, it's in terms of housing, it's in terms of health. Like yesterday, I was raising this issue with the Fianna Fáil minister at Leaders' Questions about the fact that they are blocking the building of 1,500 beds across our hospital network. The HSE has the plans to build those beds. They have, in some cases, they have the individuals to build those beds, but the funding is not being provided. And what do we have? 700 people, each with a heartbreaking story on hospital trolleys right across our hospital network. So people understand that.
But I get what you're saying, Pierce. But like, if you look at sort of the Farmers Alliance that's coming out, it's really clear what they are offering. Or if you look at the 100% redress part, it's really clear that we're offering what they're offering. And it, you know, it maybe is from Sinn Féin that votes will go in that direction. But and then when it comes to the other very motive issues, it should be, the election should be about housing and health and 100% redress. But we saw in a recent presidential election that it's not often the way it is.
Greg, you're 100% right. Look, a single issue candidate will always be clearer than what a political party is, because a political party isn't just, you know, saying we will over the next 5 years deal with one issue, because it's not just one issue. Like I mentioned, a number of issues here. But special needs is a massive issue. The fact that parents in this county, you know, do not have the supports. It's not just that. Agriculture is a big issue. What's happening in terms of fisheries is a disaster in terms of this county. So, like, parties have to have an all-encompassing programme. And then the challenges for a political party compared to a single-issue candidate or a single-issue party is how do you get that message out? So I think people understand very clearly that there is a very clear difference between us on the issue of housing. Sinn Féin are the party that will build social affordable and cost rental houses at scale. We will deal with the issues that are there that have been created by successive governments. I think there's a clear difference between us in terms of health, but in some other areas, we need to look at how we're communicating and how we're making it clear to voters actually that we have a different approach from government and we have a plan that is actually better in terms of government. So, and that's the challenge, because you only get so much. Like, I can't go through everything here.
No,
on this
I
show.
Get that. No, I know that. Yeah.
And it's the same way if you're on RTE, like you'll only get a wee snippet. Like yesterday I was doing Leaders Questions. The big issue that I was raising on Leaders Questions yesterday was that we would ban rent increases. When RTE covered that story, that isn't the angle they took. The previous Thursday, when I did Leaders Questions, the key message was that we were going to abolish the TV licence. Again, when RTE covered that story, that isn't the message that was actually articulated. That's no criticism of RTE. They have to take their editorial package and figure out what part of what I said was most important to them or what the government said.
What did they pick up on yesterday briefly? Just if it wasn't about the gaps in rent, what did they pick up on?
They picked up on the fact that the 2% cap in relation to the pressure zones, the rent pressure zones, if it's been breached by landlords because rents have increased by over 4%.
All right, okay.
But the key point is that we're saying is we have runaway rents. Rents have gone up 23% for new tenancies here in Donegal. And Sinn Féin want to freeze rents for the next 3 years, build social housing.
I get
scale,
you. We can't do the whole campaign here. I don't want to do an RT on you, but I get you. And now in the gap between people in rented accommodation now versus people who are trying to rent, and particularly in Donegal, a lot of people are going to be seeking rent or moving out of homes and moving into others. It's very, very difficult. But Richard, you know, communicating your message and what people actually will end up voting on, like, it's really easy. I think I would find it really easy if I were suggesting, you know, what a party or an individual, how they would articulate themselves and what they would talk about to best get people out and to vote for them. And as I said, you know, we kind of saw that a little bit in the Brexit vote. They did away with all the technical stuff because it gets a little bit complicated and just went down to the absolute basics.
Yeah, it did. And that's a classic example of how the message gets distorted to hear what people want to hear. But I think there's some key issues that are facing the electorate, and it's, you know, I'm not going to make it as a party political because technically I'm a neutral in this one, but what I would say the key issues for the electorate is, number one, probably housing, total lack of housing. Number two, adequate infrastructure. You know, successive governments have grossly underspent. We could have had a good opportunity to spend in the recession when money was cheap to borrow. And as anybody who drives around Letterkenny will know, the state of the traffic and even just around the town is bad enough. But actually, the sheer remoteness from Donegal to the rest of the country is just crying out to get better road and rail and rail infrastructure in place. So whoever comes into government, if they can articulate that they've actually got a vision that they're prepared to actually drive through and not get bogged down in kind of planning court cases and not got bogged down from, you know, yes, minister, yes, it's a good idea, but no, you can't do that, minister. I think any party who actually stands up and says, look, here's a major crisis affecting the country. And the other thing we need to be aware of as well is that in the state of Ireland now, we're looking to rise the population up to around about, and I think Pearse Arena can correct me on the numbers, but I think it's around about 8 to 10 million over the next 20 years. If we actually get that level of population in place, then that actually makes the state that much more wealthier in terms of tax take. But the key issue is to make sure that we actually plan it, because what we've done for the last 60 years in the state is not actually plan. We've allowed ad hoc developments to come through. We've allowed Dublin to grow completely out of proportion. And we need to look to develop the western half, and particularly the northwest. And I think any party who can articulate that is going to resonate with the electorate.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose, Rena, too, for, in fairness, from a government, an in-situ government situation, no matter what you announce, you know, you've got very articulate people on the opposition that will point holes in it or flaws in it or how it might be done better. And it can be hard to articulate, you know, what you would see as the positive work and progression that is ongoing on an ongoing basis. That, in terms of messaging, is a challenge for an in-situ government too, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I know Piers there mentioned about the inadequate funding for marine and that, and I couldn't but help hearing this morning on your show on Highlands that
it wasn't on my show. But it was on the news.
It was a news item earlier. Yeah, that Donegal has got 32 million for marine in the last 4 years. Just this morning, there was a recent announcement where Killybegs got 5 million, which is phenomenal. And that will just, that will finalise that project that they're doing there. Rathmullen and a load of other peers got funding as well to the tune of 8.6 million. Rathmullen got 3.8 million. Port Salon, 1.4 million, I think. Bortonport, Bunbeg, my own area here in Ishone, we got almost 1 million for Port Aline, and Inver got 332,000. We can't discount all of that. That's 32 million since Minister McConnell Oge was made minister. So we have to remember those things too. And you're right, these things can be forgotten, but that has been delivered. Mm-hmm. It's not just a promise.
Yeah, okay. Listen, we'll be back with more from our guests after we take a quick break. Stay right where you are. I did listen to much of the debate yesterday on rents, but I didn't hear your views, Piers, if you don't mind, on the licence fee. And the reason I'm going to ask you about this is because Micheál Martin's quoted this morning saying that he'd be in favour of, I believe it is, and I don't want to misquote him, but a revenue collected licence fee. But he says that people are afraid to talk about that because it kind of might be in the same space as the water charges and stuff. But he says maybe it's a conversation that needs to be had. If you did scrap the licence fee, what would you replace it with?
Yeah, thanks for coming on to this. And I just want to pick up on Rena's point as well, because it, obviously as a Donegal politician, we welcome any money coming into the county and the announcement today. But it's important, Greg, that your listeners know where that money's come from. It's called the BAR scheme. That's a redundancy scheme which decommissioned a large portion of our Irish fleet. That's the problem. That's what fishermen are worried about, fishing communities are worried about. It seems to be retracting over and over again. So this isn't something to be, you know, championing. The fact that we are decommissioning our Irish fleet and then using that money to actually build piers when we don't have fishermen out actually, or fishers out fishing. That's the big concern and the big problem that Charlie McConnell has not addressed as Minister for fisheries and marine. So, you know, it's important to recognise why this money's here and where it's coming from. The second thing is, yeah, the TV licence. Look, we're very clear in relation to the TV licence. The TV licence should be abolished. This isn't just us that's saying this. Before there was ever a whisper of the controversy around Ryan Tuberty or the barter accounts or the flip-flops or the non-payment, potentially non-payment of tax on redundancy payments, all of the scandals that we've seen in the last 2 years in terms of RTE, there was a commission set up by the government in terms of the future of media. And it looked at the future of media. And this is an expert group that took a while to actually come up with a report. The report is over 200 pages long. And they have looked at all of this. And they have said the TV licence needs to be abolished. It should be abolished in 2024. Now, they gave this report.
But how would you fund the public service broadcaster?
They argued, just as we argue, that it should be funded through direct exchequer. So you will that the public funding should come from direct exchequer. Nothing new here, nothing novel in this, because TG Carr is already entirely funded by exchequer funding. That's the way it is. It doesn't get license fee funding, and there's no questions in relation to the independence.
Yeah,
of
but
TG
I mean, if you start opening up that debate, and I'm going to bring our other guests into it as well, right? you're going to have to start talking about presenters' wages and stuff as well, because it has to be an appropriate use of our money, really. Don't forget, when we're looking for money, we're reminded it's our money. So, you know, so are you looking at, like, you would have to overhaul how the organisation is run as part of that deal that would secure its future into the very long term? So, you know, it would be putting quite a lot on the table on behalf of the taxpayer. What would you want from RT in return?
Well, first of all, we've made it clear to RT what we'd want in return. They need to clean up their shop. They need to deal with the issues in terms of excess wages. In fairness, the new Director General has come in and has made it clear that the type of wages that we've seen in the past, in some cases that were above €500,000 in the past, aren't going to be tolerated.
Well, really, I don't want to argue every point here, but I mean, $150,000 for the 9 to 10 show, right? Ryan Tuberty, who left that earning almost €500,000, is getting 70,000, or is it £90,000, you know, for three times the work in the UK. Have things changed? You know, was that presenter, who I like, by the way, was he offered 80,000 a year? Was he offered 100,000 a year? Or did they just say, that's worth 150,000 a year? Like, where's the proof anything's changing?
So let me be clear in relation to this here. Sinn Féin, if we were in government, aren't going to start dictating to RT how to run their TV stations or their, you know, or their TV shows or anything like that. They are independent, and they will have editorial independence in all of this here. But there is an expectation, even at this stage, because there is, like, the TV license contributes a large amount to RT. But the TV licence makes up about 58% of the public funding that goes to RT. 42% of the public funding comes from the Exchequer. So there's a huge amount coming from the Exchequer anyway. So we expect that there is proper governance in relation to financial controls, that there's no wastage of money, which we've seen over the last number of years. The kind of carry-on was absolutely scandalous and crazy. And also that presenters' wages are reduced. Now, in fairness, Greg, in anybody's, you know, people can argue, is the wage still too high? But look, there is no €500,000. There used to be wages in RT of 700,000.
I get you. Okay, I want to bring our other guests in as well. Richard Logue, what's your view?
Well, RTE, and I'm agreeing everything there with Pierce is saying regarding presenter wages and all of that. But one big thing that RTE continually failed to do is adequately serve the diaspora. Now, it so happens, if you talk to any Irish person abroad, most are able to watch RTE through illegal IPTV streaming services or grey market sky boxes, all of which revenue could be going into RTE's coffers. But RTE, because they say they're tied up with rights, basically lock away most of their very good content. Compare and contrast with TG Cahir. Nearly everything that TG Cahir put out on their station is available to watch. I have a TG Cahir app on my smart TV at home in London, and I see pretty much everything I could possibly want to see on that. Obviously, they don't show films or imported programmes, but you'd accept that. RTE, on the other hand, shows some fair few scraps from their very badly performing RTE player. But in terms of the TV licence, the problem is that since the revelation of Tuberty's excessive salaries and also, in my personal opinion, the gross mismanagement by RTE senior management, is increasing numbers of licence fee evasion. So how do you actually end up funding RTE? Because I do believe RTE serve a vital cultural purpose in the heart of the nation. There's no doubt about that. But I don't see why we need to pay a presenter big, big money. Why can't RTE be used as a broadcaster to nurture talent? And if they get the talent, then maybe they'll go on to Virgin Media TV or out to UK TV, whoever. But I think RTE need to start thinking about, who are they actually serving? Are they serving themselves, or are they serving the Irish people?
Yeah. Okay. Rena Donaghy, as I mentioned, I quoted your party leader's comments today that he says, central funding is the way forward. Would you be a fan of RT? Would you be in favour of that model? What's your view?
Well, Greg, I have to agree there. People have been infuriated with what went on in RTE, and there was no proper governance, as we all seen, and people just feel that they shouldn't be paying a license for what we've been getting. But how do we find how do we fund this if we don't? And that is a conversation. It's a real conversation that needs to be had, you know, and find a proper way to fund it, a proper broadcasting system where there will be I mean, what went on was terrible, and as I say, it did infuriate the people.
Well, you know, it infuriated if you can trust the figures, which we all do, of course, especially given our first topic. Since that controversy broke, their radio listenership figures have skyrocketed.
Yeah, I would say so.
Which is kind of interesting.
People are just not happy with RTE.
They've gone up, Brina. Their radio listenership figures have gone up quite significantly.
Well, I don't know why that is, but I mean, people definitely are absolutely anything but happy with what has happened in the last year. And still not sorted.
Right, just before we take a break, I want everyone listening, and Richard and Rena, to put your fingers in the air while I ask in your ears while I ask Pierce this question. How do you, with this type of conversation, and then maybe you were very careful earlier on when you talked about how you were editorialised taking leaders' questions, on the quiet, on the QT, with everyone with the fingers in the ear, there must be some part of you wonders if sometimes you or your party is treated a certain way because of certain stances that you take on certain issues? Or are you 100% happy that your editorialised or the editorial process is very fair with Sinn Féin?
No, not at all. And let's just nail this. That's not what I was suggesting. We're going to be on the show
suggesting
for about
it. I'm asking,
no.
Is part...
No, I know, and I'm just making it clear that's not what I'm suggesting, because we're on this programme for an hour. Maybe something that we say on this program might get used in a news clip later on. It's not my decision. It's your decision or the news desk decision. I'm happy that we got coverage. What I'm saying is that our position or our proposal or our solution wasn't the bit that was covered. And that's where we have to struggle and find better ways of communicating, you know, our message. Just let's be clear in relation to, because I think you mentioned Micheál Martin is favouring central funding. He's not. What Micheál Martin is proposing is that revenue collect the TV licence, that no home will escape this.
You're quite correct, sorry.
That it will
be
part of the household charge, and that everybody will have to every household will have to pay the TV licence, which at the minute, it's not the case. It's only if you have a TV set. And as we know, 30% of people refused to pay the TV licence at times last year. So,
you're quite correct. And my apology. And also what he said as part of that is because obviously everyone would be paying it, that it could actually come down in price. You're correct. I'm actually really disappointed in myself that I misrepresented that, but that's exactly...
No, I just want to be clear, and that's the problem. And that was completely against the expert group that looked at this year and what's happened in other jurisdictions where the Exchequer is actually funding the public part of the RTE. And it's not just RTE. The proposals by Commission the Man isn't just about funding RTE or TGCAR. It's also funding public service content, which is on your radio show here. I know you don't own the show, Greg, but like is on Highland Radio, Ocean FM and Midwest Radio and many others when they do the news. So it's not just about how we fund RTE and TGCAR, but it's also how we fund other media which broadcast or carry public service content. And that could be, you know, your local news, it could be your GA results, it's all of that kind of stuff.
So but there's none of that at really the moment. Important. There is limited funding for special documentaries and features, but just to be clear, the Commission recommended
increasing that level of funding, and that's why we need to actually agree with the Commission's proposals, end the TV licence, directly Exchequer fund it, increase the level of funding that supports not just RTE and TGCAR, but actually other media that's carrying public service content.
Coming back with more after these. Right, it's almost a year, just 10 days out from a year, since the Ladies Gaelic Football Association introduced a new policy that allows transgender women and girls to play the sport. The new policy, which was ratified, of course, as I mentioned, states the association is committed to the inclusion of transgender women and that it will not tolerate any harassment or discrimination. There have been renewed calls this week to revisit that decision, which it's claimed was made with little or no consultation. So the question is, I suppose I'll start with you, Richard, on this one. Would you support the LGFA's current stance, or should the concerns of some of its members and those with an interest in the sport over safety and what have you? There's also concerns about, you know, shared spaces and what have you. Is it a conversation that should be revisited?
First of all, I think what we need to understand is at what point are we defining somebody as transgender as opposed to man or woman? My understanding is at the moment, anybody could literally put on a dress or something. I'd say, I'm a woman now, and I self-identify as a woman. If they're in a situation, and maybe this called for proper legislation around the whole issue of gender identity and gender change, the question needs to be, at what point does a person, having been biologically born a man, is that now a woman? You know, so there is an issue on, you know, physical ability, for instance. So I would favour, if we're going to go down the road of talking about accepting transgender people into ladies' Gaelic football, or indeed women into men's Gaelic football, maybe we need to have a kind of a defined point in law as to when somebody actually has officially transitioned.
Well, just to be clear, part of the LGFA rules is that there has to be evidence given or proof that the person has transitioned or is transitioning. So it's not it's not just simply saying that I am a different gender and now I want to play with people whom I claim, who, you know what I mean? So there are, how detailed and enforced they are, I don't know, but it's not just simply a case of saying, now I want to play ladies' football.
But the whole issue at the front of my mind in all of this, and I'm all for people who want to, you know, want to change their gender, if they want to do that, it's entirely their business. But my issue is entirely around safeguarding and to ensure that anybody who does join is not a physical threat and they're joining for the right reasons as well. The question, incidentally, in this day and age, why the LFG, the Ladies Gaelic Football Association, is not really an integral part of the GAA, but maybe that's an entirely different debate, which might take time as well.
Of course, but you talked about physical differences. It's perfectly possible that you could have a 6'2" attacker, biological female, taking on a 5'2" defender. Probably more likely the reverse, so I'll switch that around. But do you know what I mean? There is already physical advantages that are probably evident with people born the same gender.
My prime concern would be for anybody who's in that position, indeed anybody who joins these things. I think, you know, as I'm a school governor myself, and I'm actually involved with safeguarding at the school I'm a governor at, and the key issue is always around, you know, are these people on the level? Are they genuine? Is there no ulterior reasons why they want to join? But I think the key thing is to make sure, and I'm heartened from what you said, that there is going to be some level of safeguarding standards around that. But I do think that there probably needs to be some form of legislation covering sex change, because I think Pierce Arena might correct me on this, but I don't believe there's anything in Irish law at the moment that covers that.
Okay, well, we'll go to Rena next. Do you share concerns over that LGFA decision? I mean, we're a year into it now, so the decision has been made. But as I say, very quickly, we did see a transgender woman playing in a women's match. So, it's going to happen very rarely, to be honest, but it still is obviously a significant enough concern to some within the women's game and some outside it, Rena. What's your view?
Yeah, well, the LGFA have, as you say, introduced a policy in respect of trans women who transitioned or are transitioning from male to female and their participation in ladies' Gaelic football. The LGFA were proactive in doing this, but although everyone may not agree, I believe they were the first to do this. And I do believe that there are very strict criteria as well laid down. Now, I am a mother myself, and I understand we're living in very difficult and different times. Young people are meeting many, many challenges and struggles and changes, and we must be sensitive to all of this. Now, I played sport myself. I played camogie for the county, so I know a wee bit about the physicality of it. Personally, and this is personally, I believe that if a trans woman is on a team, there's an unfair disadvantage. A person biologically born a male will be much stronger than a female. And if a boy go through natural puberty, the changes in testosterone, that'll change the physicality and gives a much increased muscle and increased bone mass because they are a man rather than a woman. So physically, that person is no match in a game for a female. And I know that there are safety issues as well, and, you know, injuries and shared spaces and safeguarding and all of that. But
like, I think, too, we have to be sure that we are being fair to absolutely everybody, because, you know, the person who was who played in a ladies' game was pictured, and that picture was put around social media as if to sort of make a mockery of the decision. I mean, you know, I think in any decision that's made, we have to make sure that it is done correctly and in the best interests of everyone, and thinking of the all the potential consequences that follow. Piers Doherty, what's your view?
Yeah, Greg, I think you know we have to come at this from a couple of points. First of all, we have to come at this from a fairness to everybody, including trans women and including women who are already participating in those games. We have to look at it from, you know, the competition in many of these sports. It's competitive sport and all of the rest. We have to come at it from a safety issue. We have to come at it from an inclusive issue. In my view, like, when we talk about this issue and in sport, their sport is varied. So, you know, somebody, rugby is very different to somebody playing chess, you know, for example. So in that instance, it's my view that it's the governing bodies that are best placed to make these decisions, bearing in mind all of these issues and the science, which Rena has touched on. And I think what you've seen in not just at the LGFA, but actually right across the globe, is that you've seen probably an attempt from governing bodies to be inclusive. And they have allowed the participation of trans women in female competitions. Some and many have actually rolled back on that now because of, you know, the points that Rena had talked about in relation to people who go through puberty and the competitive advantage. And look, we're all familiar with, you know, people breaking new records in relation to female participation, whether it's in swimming or cycling or elsewhere, trans women. So there is an issue that has to be about inclusive to everybody, to those who have been participating in the games for many, many years. But it is really the body that is best placed to make that decision. And they need to follow the science. And some of this is new. That's why, like, you know, the World Aquatic Foundation reversed their decision in relation to this. Other sporting bodies are looking at, is there open categories that should be available? I think cricket, for example, has done that for different reasons anyway, but like so that people can participate, because you have to look at balancing all of those rights in terms of inclusivity, but fairness to the sport in terms of competition, and also in some categories, the issues of fairness or the issues of safety will come in.
Do you have a personal opinion as to whether or not transgender women should be able to play women's GAA?
Well, I think the first thing is, I think the LGFA have, is my understanding is they have rules. It's not just a case of, you know, that somebody can identify as a
No, as I a stated woman. That, what the rules were. Yeah.
And there is kind of scientific that they have to provide in terms of testosterone levels and all the rest. And what I would basically say is follow the evidence. I'm not kind of, I haven't delved into this in any great detail.
You must have a view. You must have a view.
Testosterone levels or any of that, or like the lung capacity and the bone density and all of this stuff. That's a way above my pay grade in relation to these issues.
But you can put yourself in a position. We all can put ourselves in a position that if we had a daughter who's 15, 16, 17, 18, whatever age it might be, playing football, would we be okay if there was a transgender woman who was a biological male playing opposite them? It'd be very easy to formulate an opinion whether we thought that was okay or not.
Well, first of all, you know, you could ask the question, do you think it's okay to have an open category in sport where men and female are mixed? And in many sports, it's actually completely okay. But in a lot of context sports, maybe it's completely not okay because there's issues in terms of safety. And they're the issues that have to be weighed up in terms of all of that. And the governing councils are the best bodies to actually do that. Like, cricket has an open, but it's not a contact sport, so therefore there's no issue here. If it was rugby, it's a different matter.
Let's take the physicality out of it. You could have a girl, right, who has trained for cricket or whatever it might be throughout all the school years and is sat on the sidelines because a person who was born a male is in the process of transitioning to the woman and takes that person's spot, be it in GEA, swimming, whatever it might be. Is that fair? Because women women are up against enough at the moment, aren't they?
Their governing councils across the world have reversed some of their decisions that they've made because there was a competitive advantage.
Okay.
And that's why I'm saying you have to be inclusive to everybody. So if you've got a situation where somebody is born biologically a woman, who is a woman, and they have been competing at the peak of their game, and then a trans woman has come in and has won all the records because of they have gone through puberty and the issues that Rena has identified in terms of bone density, lung capacity, testosterone levels, all of that kind of stuff has given them a competitive advantage. That's not fair.
Yeah, okay.
You know, so but as I said, these things have to be taken on a sport by sport basis.
But as we move to
governing bodies across the globe have actually done that, have looked at the science and have done that. But the important thing is we need to look at how do we be inclusive as well.
And that's
where you have to try and marry three issues: safety, inclusivity, and competitive advantage.
But these are the types of things that are going to come up in debates in a run-up to a general election.
And absolutely.
I'm not really clear what your view on it is, you see. But listen, anyway, that's fine. And you've answered, and I appreciate your time. Deputy Piers Doherty, have a wonderful weekend. Take care of yourself. Rena Donaghy, a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Great. Can I just lastly offer my sympathy on the death of John Bruton and his wife, Fionnuala, and the family?
Yeah,
thank
for
you.
Sure. We'll share in that and pass on our condolences to them. Thank you, Rena. Take care of yourself. Richard, thanks for joining us from the airport. Safe home.